Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I am an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York, on the other line, in Los Angeles, is the Scarlett Johansson to my John Travolta, Keith Caulfield. How's it going, Keith?
Don't touch me.
You could be the Idina Menzel to my John Travolta.
I'm just doing my sultry Scarlett Johansson voice.
One of my favorite things to do is just touch Keith's face. So
as someone said on Twitter, like, hey, John Travolta's doing like the like a great impersonation of like your uncle on ecstasy at the family reunion.
Just like, let me feel your nose, please, on live television.
I'm getting your name right, except now I'm touching you.
What's worse? Like, what would you rather have happen to you? Would you rather have John Travolta mispronounce your name in front of like a huge performance,
or
would you
me?
Rather have him touch your face?
Well, it depends on how he's touching. Whoa! No, I don't. Do I get a pass on both? I mean, at this point, like, is he going to come? Like, is it going to be like we're talking about the Academy Awards? I'm sure you guys know what we're talking about.
I kind of hope can this be a yearly thing where it's like next year Idina Menzel and John Travolta come out and he just like I don't even know what he would do. Like, I guess he would have to like trip her on stage or something like that. It's getting worse.
Sing "You're the One That I Want," but he gets the lyrics wrong, and then Olivia Newton-John comes out, and it's just like, John, what are you doing? I don't know what accent that is.
I don't know what accent that is either. Anyway, Keith, welcome to this week's Pop Shop Podcast. We have, as always, a ton to talk about. We are going to be talking about The Weeknd, who has a top 10 hit on the Hot 100, Imagine Dragons debuting at number one on our albums chart. The Oscar bumps, we'll go back to the Oscar bumps. Lady Gaga kind of killing it with her Sound of Music medley at the Oscars. We have some cool soon-to-be hits this week. We're going to be talking about the Selena Gomez Zed single. And we have a special interview with pop rising star Tori Kelly, who stopped by actually just a couple hours ago to the Pop Shop Podcast to talk about her new single, Nobody Love, her forthcoming debut album, which was executive produced by Max Martin, and much more. Before we start, a few housekeeping notes. If you like the show, subscribe to us on iTunes or give us a rating and review. We always appreciate that kind of feedback. Subscription means that you'll never miss an episode. Who would ever want to miss an episode of this? You never want to. As well as if you have any questions for us, find us on Twitter. I am at Jason Lipschutz. He is at Keith_Caulfield.
It's really succinct. It's really short, Keith_Caulfield. You know, I didn't really think about that when I got my Twitter handle, Caulfield, you know, so many years ago. I'm like, oh, it should be shorter because I was trying for Keith Caulfield, but someone already had that. And I thought,
really?
Keithers.
Somebody already had at Keith Caulfield?
Yeah, and he hasn't, like, really tweeted in years.
Lame.
And I thought, what about Keithers? Because that's my domain name. And then that was already taken. I'm like, all right, fine, Keith_Caulfield. And I didn't really put it together at the time how many characters that took up and how annoying that might be. But
it's fine.
I digress.
It's totally fine. Just a quick thank you once again to everyone who contributed to last week's podcast. We had an Ask the Pop Shop where we took a bunch of Twitter questions, and that was a lot of fun last week. So thanks again to that. Keith, are you ready to get this week's show on the road?
No, but okay, sure.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm supposed to say. Like, no, I'm not ready. Of course I'm ready.
All right, Hot 100, Uptown Funk, still number one. And we've kind of glossed over it as we do when a song just kind of keeps going at number one for weeks and weeks and weeks. Not much left to say about it. It's been number one for 8 weeks now. And Keith, let's check back in on this Bruno Mars, Mark Ronson song. How long, what do you think about this? How long could it stay there? Is it losing any steam? Like, is it going to keep going 9, 10, 11 weeks? What do you think, man?
Yeah, all those things. I mean, well, no, it's not all those things. It's not losing steam. I thought it was losing steam last week. It was down a little bit. This week, it's up 2% in Hot 100.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so it's still like tens of thousands of points because the Hot 100 is compiled using points. It's kind of complicated. But anyway, it's tens of thousands of points ahead of the number two song. So I don't really see it like subsiding anytime soon. Of course, anything is possible, especially when you look at titles below number two, say the fast rising Ellie Goulding song, Love Me Like You Do.
Yeah.
It has a big gain, but still it's like 49, 59, 60. It's like 30,000 points. It's like thousands and that. It's like so far behind that like it would take like a really, really, really big jump in the next 2 weeks for it to like overtake number one. So I think it's going to sit tight for the next couple weeks.
So you mentioned Ellie Goulding, Love Me Like You Do, moves up to number three now. Ellie has never had a number one hit, I believe. I think Lights topped out at number two,
yes.
if memory serves me well.
Yep, you're correct.
So we shall see another song. What's crazy is that there are two songs now from the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack in the top 10 because Love Me Like You Do was already there. Now The Weeknd's Earned It joins it in the top 10, moving up three spots to number nine this week. And Keith, let's talk about this a little bit. How much is that number nine posting, which is really impressive for, you know, The Weeknd? He's never had a top 10 solo hit before. He had a number seven hit with Ariana Grande a couple months ago with Love Me Harder. This is his first top 10 hit alone. I mean, how much is this due to, you know, just the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack doing really well? People streaming it on Spotify, people buying the songs in iTunes. What, you know, can you kind of break that down a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's all those things. I'm looking at its breakdown right now on the I'm looking in our computer database. And it actually is doing, it's not really doing huge numbers at radio yet, whereas Ellie Goulding is probably doing like three times better at radio.
Yeah.
The Weeknd is profiting more from streams of the song as well as sales of the song. So it's more of a streaming and sales phenomenon as opposed to airplay, which isn't that surprising because The Weeknd hasn't really had like huge like top 40 radio hits, more of a sort of cool, non-commercial type artist.
Yeah.
So, you know, clearly, you know, the way the Hot 100 is compiled in the past few years has greatly enhanced the fortunes of an artist like The Weeknd, who can have a top 10 hit without huge, huge radio support. I mean, radio is playing it, but it's just not playing it as much as, say, the rest of the songs in the top 10. In fact, it actually has, if you look at all the top 10 songs right now on the Hot 100, it has the smallest amount of radio points. So it's like the least played song on the radio among the songs in the top 10 this week.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, Keith, you kind of alluded to it a little bit. The Weeknd, kind of a cool artist, quote unquote. I mean, this guy's career just fascinates me. People kind of forget that, you know, 4 years ago, which is sort of a long time, but not that long of a time, he came out with his debut mixtape, House of Balloons. Wasn't really photographed for press, didn't really do that many interviews, kind of lived in secrecy. And has slowly but surely become this kind of commercial force where he's able to, you know, his last album, Kiss, landed pretty well on the Billboard 200 chart. Like I mentioned before, Ariana Grande, that duet, Love Me Harder, was a top 10 hit. And I know that, you know, Earned It is going to continue to stoke anticipation for his next album, which I think is coming out pretty soon. It hasn't been announced yet, but I would expect that before the summer, maybe sometime in the coming months. But yeah, man, I'm The Weeknd is just an interesting guy to me.
Yeah, you know, I have something related to The Weeknd, but it's more about the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack.
Okay.
That I'd like to talk about, if you don't mind. And Jason has no idea what I'm about to talk about.
I have no idea.
You have no idea, because we haven't prepared this part. There's two songs from the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack in the top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100 this week. How unusual is that, Jason, to have one soundtrack have two songs
in
the top 10?
How unusual is that?
How unusual is that? Well, it's fairly unusual. We don't have like super specific research on this just quite yet. But there haven't been that many songs that have had, or that many albums, that many soundtracks that have had two top 10s at the same time, like concurrent top 10s. I just did some quick research yesterday, kind of eyeballing the charts in the past to see what other soundtracks might have managed this feat. So some of them include Space Jam, which you...
Hell yeah.
I think it's one of your favorite movies and soundtracks.
I Believe I Can Fly, of course.
At one point, I think I Believe I Can Fly from R. Kelly and Seal's Fly Like an Eagle.
Fly Like an Eagle, yeah.
We're both in the top 10. I think there might have been another song from the album in the top 10 as well, which I don't quite remember.
Hit 'em High, Monstar's Anthem did pretty well.
Not that one. Monica's For You I Will also went top 10 at the same time as R. Kelly. And
okay.
For You I Will was from Space Jam as well. Some others, Reality Bites actually had two songs in the top 10.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was Baby, I Love Your Way, the cover that Big Mountain did. Yep. And I think Lisa Loeb's Stay might have been in the top 10 at the same time. And then some other really obvious ones that people listening probably are thinking of right now. Grease, Saturday Night Fever, Footloose, Dirty Dancing, and Flashdance. Those are just a handful. I mean, there could be more, but I think it's really interesting to sort of think about the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack in the same breath as those soundtracks in terms of having, like, you know, generating hits.
It's true.
Because I would never think of 50 Shades of Grey in the same thought as, say, Flashdance.
Grease.
Or Grease. You know, it just doesn't really compute. But it's kind of amazing what 50 Shades of Grey has done in terms of both selling albums and also generating hit singles.
Yeah, you think about some of the biggest soundtracks in the last 20 years, two that come to mind, Frozen and Titanic, and both of those songs had huge hits, but only one hit each. The Celine Dion song, My Heart Will Go On from Titanic, Let It Go, obviously, from Frozen. And they, so 50 Shades of Grey, what Keith, you're saying is that it's unusual that neither the Weeknd song nor the Ellie Goulding song will probably be as big as either of those hits, but together, I mean, they're really helping to power the soundtrack, which, and let's just go right to it. The 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack is continuing to sell well on the Billboard 200, as is Drake's, if you're reading this, it's too late. Drake is number two, 50 Shades of Grey, number three, respectively. Yeah, man, I mean, they're both in their second week. They're still selling over 150,000 copies, or at least album equivalent units.
Yeah,
I
was like, no, wait, Jason, no. It's album Call
myself,
equivalent
man.
Units. It's okay. We're all getting used to the lingo. Yeah, Drake is number two with, if you're reading this, it's too late, did 187,000 units last week, of which 129,000 were actual album sales. And then the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack falls two to three, with 165,000 units. Of that, 115,000 were traditional album sales.
Yeah, and they're both behind the number one debut, Imagine Dragons, Smoke and Mirrors. They earn their first number one album. Their debut album, Night Visions, debuted at number two a couple years ago, and now they're at number one. Congrats to those guys. They were on Billboard's cover a couple weeks ago. Check that out on Billboard.com. And Key, let's talk about this for a sec. Smoke and Mirrors, 172,000 in pure album sales. And we'll talk about Imagine Dragons in a second, but this is kind of the third or fourth or fifth, I don't have, you know, a list in front of me, really strong album debut of 2015 so far. It's been like 7 or 8 weeks, and there's been a lot of, you know, surprisingly pretty big debuts.
Well, I mean, is this really that strong? I mean, really?
Is it?
Is it? I mean, I don't mean that in sort of a shitty
way. To me, anything over 150,000
at this point, yeah, true.
At this point is pretty darn good.
I mean, I guess I was expecting Imagine Dragons to be bigger. You know, because their first album did 2.5 million.
Yeah.
It has never left the chart. It has been in the top 100 for every single one of its 129 weeks, except for just two. It generated three top 20 hits on the Hot 100 chart. I mean, they have this great track record. I think, though, in my mind, I need to sort of, you know, put it into a different frame of reference where you have to think of how they're still a fairly kind of anonymous band in many ways to, I think, the general public who like their hits and like their sound and enjoyed them on the radio and maybe saw them in concert, but they don't have that kind of sort of X Factor kind of thing happening. I mean, maybe it's kind of like, you know, when Hooting the Blowfish's second album came out, it was like,
ooh.
No.
But not, that's funny.
Not, I mean, it's, I'm trying to think of it this way. You know, you have those kinds of rock bands that percolate for a long time with their first album, like Foster the People or
Phoenix. Not their first album, but
same kind of thing.
They had their mainstream moment,
right? You know,
they kind of have to follow that up.
They have a breakthrough album that lasts for like a year and a half or 2 years in the charts. They generate a couple hit singles. You know, the album does well. It sells like a million copies or more. And then the next album comes out. It has a big first week, or you know, a sizable first week, and then it drops quickly because there's not enough fans to sustain the sales into the second, third, fourth, and continuing weeks. So I don't think that's going to necessarily happen with Imagine Dragons, though, you know, because it starts fairly well, but it's not starting as big as Drake. And you think, well, gee whiz, 2.5 million people bought your last album. Why did only 172,000 of them show up in their first week, especially in light of the fact that they had that huge Target commercial that aired during the Grammy Awards. That was a 4-minute commercial during a commercial break, and that they had a special Target exclusive that was carried at the store with bonus tracks. So it doesn't compute completely in my head, but at the same time, I also have to step back and say, you know, Imagine Dragons is not a first week artist. It is about the long haul.
That's exactly true. Yeah.
It is about how they do, you know, in the next 12 to 16 months. Also not working for them, the first single is not exactly like blowing up the world. You know, it did well at alternative radio, but it's just getting started at top 40 radio, which is kind of odd. How slow the song is getting off to a start here.
Yeah. And I think this debut, which I would still argue because of that kind of soft opening for I Bet My Life, I think that this debut is actually pretty impressive. I think a lot of it is owed to a kind of halo effect from Night Visions. People really like those songs, Radioactive and Demons and It's Time, and they want to, you know, check out what Imagine Dragons will do next. I agree with you though that it's going to be about the long game for them.
Are you surprised at all that Imagine Dragons, after selling 2.5 million copies, sold 172,000 in their first week, whereas Fall Out Boy, who did less with their last album, started with 192,000 in their first week a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised at all, actually, because I think that Fall Out Boy has more of a track record.
True.
The thing that's working for Fall Out Boy is that they have fans of their mid-2000s stuff, like, you know, diehard fans, but they also have kind of the new fans that have jumped on board when they came back in 2013 that, you know, want to, you know, really like Save Rock and Roll and really want to get with what they're doing now.
They have that that legacy of people who want to buy a full album. You know, they have like this core diehard fan base that have been with them for like, you know, a decade or more. Whereas Imagine Dragons, it's not quite the same thing. Notably, just want to point out, Save Rock and Roll, Fall Out Boy's last album, has sold 728,000. Their next album did bigger in its first week than Imagine Dragons, which did 2.5 million with their last album. So again, it's about on the surface they're both rock bands, but at the same time they're very, very different artists.
Yeah, and I think that it's the last thing I want to say about this is that it's worth pointing out that Imagine Dragons, they had a number two debut last time out with Night Visions, and a lot of people saw that as surprising because, you know, that they were still only really known for the song It's Time at that point. And then their second single, Radioactive, was the one that kind of, I believe it, didn't it break the record for weeks spent on the Hot 100? It eventually broke that, right? We talked about that on the podcast last year, how it owned that record of longest number of weeks spent on the Hot 100. So, hey, you never know. Maybe the second single of this Imagine Dragons song will catch on even more than I Bet My Life. Keith, let's talk about Oscars, man.
Yes.
Before we start talking about the sales bumps and stuff, what did you think of the show?
Well, I didn't see the entire thing. I think I stepped away for a chunk in the middle, as probably a lot of people do. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Hot take.
Was there something? I don't know. It was a couple days ago. Was there something specific that you wanted me to address?
No, I think, you know, a lot of people thought that it was boring. It's always long. It's always kind of boring, just in terms of the amount of awards they give out. I will say that I really thought that it deserved a little bit more praise in terms of the music factor, in terms of livening up the show. And you know, you could argue that some of the musical segments could have been cut. Maybe, you know, you didn't need like
we
a
didn't
whole
need
In Memoriam song. No. Yeah, exactly. But
I mean, God love J. HUD. Jennifer Hudson's wonderful. But do we really need a song from Smash that no one knows to accompany the In Memoriam tribute? No.
Man, it was so funny on Twitter, like when she was performing that song, the real Smash fans being exposed because people would be like, what? And me included, I was like, what is this song? And then I would see like two or three people on my timeline being like, oh, this is the song from Smash. I was like, oh, okay. You're a Smash fan. All right. I had no idea.
It's the most random. I mean, I don't, it's just, I you know, on the one hand, you get the concept of how the producers of the show want to make the show entertaining. They know that the audience at home is sort of captive, and they need to give them variety.
Yeah.
But is this the right kind of variety? Could that slot have been more effectively used? Could you have just trimmed 4.5, 5 minutes, 6 minutes from the show? I mean, that's a very long, because you have like the whole slideshow of the people that passed away last year combined with, you know, a 3 minute performance. It's a good chunk of time, you know, whereas Lady Gaga's performance at the beginning of that, I'm like, oh boy. Like, where is this going to go? Because, you know, I mean, it just, because, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen. You know, Lady Gaga was announced, but we didn't know what she was going to be performing. And then, you know, Scarlett Johansson introduces, you know, the segment. And I'm like, oh, God, how is this going to, oh, never mind. She's great. And, you know, as you pointed out in your story online about how Gaga has reminded everyone that, yes, indeed, she can sing. And it's kind
of
a turning
point. Whoa, you read one of my stories?
Well, I read some of it. Wait, did you read my entire interview with RuPaul this week?
Of course I did. It
Shut
was amazing.
Up, lie.
Oh man. All right. So let's get to Lady Gaga before we get to the songs and the charts and stuff. I wrote a thing this week about basically how she's in the midst of a career reinvention. And because, you know, as well as Art Pop did, it was number one debut on the Billboard 200 chart. It did have a top 10 hit with Applause. It was seen widely as a step back for her after the success of, you know, The Fame Monster and Born This Way. And what she's done since then has really kind of relied on the classics a little bit and dialed things back, first with Cheek to Cheek with Tony Bennett, and you know, which she performed at the Grammys with Tony Bennett, and didn't really have any kind of elaborate stage setup, and did the same thing kind of here at the Oscars with this Sound of Music medley. She was more classic stuff, more, you know, anti-choreography.
And it's practically operatic.
I mean, yeah, and exactly, showcasing her voice. I mean, Keith, real quick, what do you think about this? Do you think that this kind of decision to go classic route in terms of song style as well as performance style is working for Gaga?
Well, as we noted in the podcast with Tyler Oakley, devout Lady Gaga stan, Tyler yeah. Oakley, I said, you know, the Cheek to Cheek album with Tony Bennett was a great way to remind people that truly Gaga can sing. And she has an amazing voice. And I think that people were distracted. And I noted this during our show, said people have been distracted by all of the bells and whistles and the, you know, art on top of the pop, as you pointed out in your piece. So I think if you asked her, she would just say, these are different, you know, these are different representations of my art and different, you know, styles. And I really like these songs, and at the same time, I love, you know, going on stage and, you know, having some performance artists puke on me. I mean, you know, it's kind of, why can't I be all these things? Why can't I, you know, be glamorous and do jazz songs one day and then do like a heavy metal song the next day with, you know, another artist, you know?
Yeah.
She would probably say something like that, I would imagine.
Yeah, Gaga is just kind of continuing to prove that she is impossible to pin down, and one thing we do know about her for sure that she's reminding people is that she's a tremendous musician, and it'll be interesting to see in terms of like a new album where she goes, and because like I said, Cheek to Cheek, a lot of people saw as a little bit of a detour, and you would kind of classify this Oscars performance in there as well. And it'll be interesting to see when she kind of gears up for album time.
I mean, she's working with Red One, or she was at least hanging out in the studio with Red One, who produced many of her early hits, like Just Dance.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's allegedly another Tony Bennett duets album, on the way. He's mentioned that. You know, it's going to be Cole Porter songs, I guess.
Yeah. So, another cheek to another cheek.
Another cheek. So who knows what can happen next?
Did you see that? It was just announced that she's going to be on the next season of American Horror Story. That came out like an hour ago.
I saw the headline. I haven't read anything about it. What's the deal with that? Fill in our listeners.
I don't really have any more info. Okay. She's just going to be on. She tweeted out that she's going to be on American Horror Story. She'll be like the next season's Adam Levine, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, Keith, back to the Oscars. Which songs are benefiting the most from being featured on, you know, this 4-hour telecast?
Was it 4 hours?
That were the Oscars. It was about 3:45, somewhere around there.
Wow, it didn't seem quite that long. Well, the biggest seller among all the songs and albums that were featured in the show, at least the main features, was the song that won for Best Original Song, "Glory," from Selma, mm-hmm. By Common and John Legend. It sold 28,000 downloads in the week ending February 22nd, which was the night of the Academy Awards. So really, that sales figure only represents a couple hours worth of impact, and we'll see a bigger gain next week, probably once we have a full 7 days of impact. But that gain, it was actually up 82%. Collectively, the songs and the albums represented in the show, which include all the nominees for Best Original Song, the score albums, the songs that J-Hud and Lady Gaga performed, et cetera, gained by 184% in sales, but still that only equated to 89,000 units. So it's not exactly a huge number. The number could be bigger next week, but there's a story online on Billboard.com. Feel free to check it out and stay tuned for next week for more gains.
Were you surprised to see such significant bumps, especially for Glory?
No. No, I mean these are significant bumps, but they're small numbers. So, when you're going from, 2,000 to 28,000, it's like, woo, that's a big gain, but, not really a large unit representation. I would be more interested to see what happens next week. And in the coming weeks, there's going to be a new Sound of Music, 50th anniversary reissue of their soundtrack coming up in the next week or two. I think it's March 10th. So who knows? Maybe that album could do some big numbers thanks to the exposure from the Academy Awards. It's sort of a halo effect. We'll see in the next few weeks how the continuing effect of all this stuff carries out.
We shall see. All right, man. We got to get to our new segment on the Pop Shop Podcast, in which we discuss some songs not quite in the top 20 of the Hot 100 yet, but are headed in the right direction and could be hits before you know it. This is Soon to Be Hits. All right, man. What do we have in Soon to Be Hits this week?
I guess I could start. I was going to start with Nick Jonas.
Nick Jonas, friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast. So therefore, if you've been on the show, that means we'll mention you later.
That's not true.
Just throwing that out there to any artists that want to be on the show. It pays off. So Nick Jonas's single Chains is actually making a run for the top 20 on the Billboard Hot 100. I will pull up its data in just 1 second. But what's really interesting about Chains is that it was actually the first single from his self-titled album.
Yeah.
And it kind of made a little bit of an impact, but didn't really do much. It was more of sort of a social phenomenon, and the video came out months and months and months and months ago. But then Jealous, which was the second single from the album, ended up being the big hit. It went top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100, went to number 2 on our mainstream top 40 airplay chart, also known as Pop Songs on Billboard.com. And so then they went back to Chains and started reworking Chains to radio. And now, this week, Chains goes 26 to 22 on the Pop Songs airplay chart. And then on the Billboard Hot 100 itself, it goes 56 to 42. So Nick Jonas could be looking at another big hit with Chains, which is actually the first single from his album, but now kind of the second single as well.
Very cool, man. So my choice for Soon to Be Hits this week is Lilywood and Robin Schulz, Prayer in C. It moves from number 29 to number 23. This has been creeping up the Hot 100 for a while now. I don't think we've mentioned it before on the Pop Shop podcast, so a good time to do so right before it looks like it's going to crack the top 20. Lilywood is a French-Israeli duo, for those who are unaware. And this is another Robin Schulz remix. He is a German producer who recently scored a top 20 hit in the U.S. with Waves from Mr. Probs. That remix, which I loved, was a top 20 hit last year. So this is Prayer in C is a it was a smash overseas. It's slowly catching on in the U.S. It's kind of in that same vein as the Waves remix, kind of like a thoughtful, kind of downbeat dance song, but it's kind of fitting in with that slowing of the tempo of top 40, and it is almost a top 20 hit now.
Well, there you go. My second and final choice selection option this week is actually another former podcast guest. As we noted, if you're on the show, it helps you. Ollie Murs with Wrapped Up. Now, the song is still probably a little bit a ways from charting on the Billboard Hot 100, but it is on the verge of debuting on our Pop Songs Airplay chart, the song, the chart I mentioned earlier with regards to Nick Jonas. It's just a couple hundred airplay spins away from charting on the chart. The song features Travie McCoy, and it has more than 50 top 40 radio stations playing it right now, so it's still a little bit early on, but if you're able to break on to the mainstream top 40 airplay chart, called Pop Songs on Billboard.com, then you probably have a fairly decent chance of breaking on to the Billboard Hot 100 because you have widespread sort of all-genre support. So it's a song to look out for. It'll still be a little bit before it probably hits the Hot 100, but it's one to watch out for, Ollie Murs.
Cool, man. All right. Those are three songs on this week's Soon to Be Hits. Also worth mentioning, let's talk about the Selena Gomez and Zedd single, I Want You to Know. We'll talk about it more next week. Let's save that for next week. I could see it debuting pretty well on the Hot 100 next week, Keith. And yeah, let's save that discussion for next week. That's a little teaser.
We're going to say that the thing exists, and then we're not even going to talk about it at all.
Exactly. It is out there in the world. It is not on the charts yet, but you never know if it could be next week. It could very well be next week. Zedd, Selena Gomez, two big names. Let's get to another big name. Tori Kelly stopped by the Pop Shop podcast this week, and it was a blast chatting with her about her upcoming debut album coming out soon. It might be in the spring. Might be a little bit later. We shall see. She called it, she said it was coming out soon. And she's been an artist to watch for a while now. I actually asked her about that. She has a new single, Nobody Love, and which has really grown on me. I've been listening to it a lot in the past couple days, and it's definitely grown on me, Keith. And her album was executive produced by Max Martin. She talked about working with him. Definitely one to watch. Here is Tori Kelly on the Pop Shop Podcast. I feel like you have been pegged as an artist to watch for months and maybe years. And I've, been listening to your music for a while.
Thank you.
I feel like if I were you, I'd be so, so anxious to get this music out and go from artist to watch to artist really,
that you're watching.
artist that you're actively watching.
Yeah.
Exactly. Do you feel like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel... It's like nervous/excited for like this whole first part of the year has been like, oh my gosh, the album's actually being finished finally. Cause that's really been like the main dream for me as a kid, even was just put out an album. And I've sort of teased myself and everybody with these little EPs that I've put out, which I'm super thankful for that I got to do that. But now it's like, wow, this is actually for real this time. So there's a little more pressure for sure. Just having people kind of throw titles at me like that, artists to watch and stuff. But yeah. At the same time, it makes me just want to be like super focused, and it gives me even more drive like to really do it for real.
Well, for people who have enjoyed your first two EPs, how much progression are we going to hear on the album when it comes out? It's coming out this spring, right?
Yeah, nothing confirmed or anything yet, but definitely soon.
Definitely
is
soon.
All I can tell you. Yeah,
we'll leave it at the soon.
Yeah, but soon. But the worst word ever. I've definitely grown a lot since the EPs, and I don't want people to think that I'm departing from a certain sound, or I'm just throwing the guitar away and like becoming this other thing, because that's still very much a part of me. But I think what people are gonna see is that little girl who dreamt of doing it's a little bit more mainstream. I'm doing the two fingers. What would you call this? What even
the
is
air
that?
Quotes?
The air quotes. Yeah. A little bit more on the pop mainstream side, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm actually really excited to kind of experiment with that world a bit more and still have that singer-songwriter acoustic feel. So it's kind of like a mixture of everything, and it's all woven together on the album through soul. There's a lot of soulfulness on it. So yeah, it's like a melting pot of all my favorite music.
Now, I'm excited because I know you worked closely with Max Martin on this project.
Yeah.
What kind of advice did he give you? Now, when you guys first started working together, what kind of guidance did he provide in terms of putting this project together?
Well, working with him was a little bit intimidating for me at first, just because of how much of a legend he is. I was like kind of nervous.
He won his first Grammy.
Yeah,
he
I know. Won a Grammy. I know. So cool. Yeah, I congratulated him and everything that day. I was surprised he even like texted back too, because it's such a crazy day, I'm sure, for him. I was like, oh my gosh, that's cool to get that. But yeah, working with him was a huge honor, because I've been a fan of his forever. It's like NSYNC, Britney stuff. So the fact that he's like still killing it now, I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy clearly is doing everything right. So I was pleasantly surprised to find out that it wasn't like the song was already laid out for me and already perfectly radio friendly, mm-hmm. and I just had to walk in and sing it. I was really happy to find out that that I got to be super involved, and if anything, I was really leading those sessions, and he was there to really make sure that I was like putting myself into these songs. So that was really great, and it kind of clicked for me then, like, oh, this is why so many artists love working with him and say only great things about him, because he genuinely cares about making the type of songs that you want to make. So yeah, working with him was really cool, and he helped sort of give the album like the boost of pop sprinkly fairy dust that it needed.
Curious about the single Nobody Love. It is it's been out a couple weeks, and people are really seeming to latch on to this song. Where did this song lyrically come from for you?
For me, the hook was kind of there as a template already, mm-hmm. and they played it for me. I was like, oh, I really like this. How can we make this work? And so for me, the challenge was really to make it a little bit deeper and have some sort of like, I guess just like some depth to it. So, cause I still wanted to keep like the lighthearted funness about it.
Yeah.
And, that was important for me to have those type of songs on the album too. Just like songs that you want to dance to. And so for me, the song, my kind of approach to it was, I felt like in this generation, as a young person, I feel like we're always sort of chasing after the next thing and searching for whatever like the hottest fling is or something, and like kind of moving on from one thing to the next, whether it's like an actual thing or even like with a person. And so the song really just talks about like the type of love that is just grounded and is solid, and it's like not going anywhere. That's kind of like the backbone to the song. That's where I pull from when I'm performing it.
Are there going to be some heartbreak songs on this album as well?
Yeah, for sure. There's there's the love songs, there's the sad, sappy songs, and okay. And then there's even like the life songs, I like to call them, of just kind of songs about like my journey thus far as an artist and just my career, rejection and stuff like that.
Okay, thanks again to Tori Kelly for stopping by. It was great chatting with her, and be on the lookout for her debut album coming soon. Keith, are you ready, man?
Yes, I think.
For your chart stat of the week.
Hey, so our chart stat of the week is actually about someone we just talked about earlier on in the show, Lady Gaga.
Heyo.
Heyo. So actually this week in 2011, on the chart dated February 26th, 2011, Lady Gaga scored the 1,000th number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 chart,
yep,
with Born This Way. You know, we've obviously had more number ones since then, but when the song went to number one, we reached out to Gaga, and she told us that it is a tremendous honor to be a number one on the Billboard Hot 100 with the 1,000th number one single. She said, to be the 1,000th number one on Billboard, I would be silly not to say this is the greatest honor of my career. Well, that's very nice of her. She said, I am so humbled and so honored and overwhelmed by the reception to Born This Way. It has been so life-changing for me as an artist. And between Billboard and the international number ones and the radio numbers, I couldn't be more blessed to have the fans that I have. Of course, that song, previewed her next album, which of course debuted at number one, and it sold a bajillion copies, and you know there were a string of hits after that, and but it was a pretty enormous milestone to have our 1,000th number one, and she was on the cover of Billboard that week with a really cool photo. It was black and white. And she had this cool cape, and
she had a shoe on her head.
Yeah, it was a shoe. Was that it? It was a very cool photo, very striking. So anyway, that's it. It's a short, simple one this week. This week in 2011, Lady Gaga had the 1,000th number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 with Born This Way.
Keith, this is going to be a pop quiz for you.
Yep.
Do you remember what the 999th number one was on the Hot 100? What Born This Way replaced at number one?
Well, I'll tell you, I kind of
remember, no. I don't want you to look it up. I want to see if you have any guesses.
I'm thinking that it was something really kind of dippy.
Dippy.
Because I'm trying. I think it was something kind of lame, and I think maybe in my head I was like,
definitely wasn't lame.
I was like, please don't let that be like our 1,000th number one. It was like
stupid. I was rooting for this to be our 1,000th number one. It was Black and Yellow by Wiz Khalifa, and a song that I still really enjoy. And I talked to him when the song went number one, and he was obviously astonished. And I was like, oh man, you missed it by one. You would have been the 1,000th number one. He's like, yeah, Lady. And that was right after Born This Way came out. And he's like, yeah, Lady Gaga's probably going to get that 1,000th number one. And indeed she did. Yeah. So Keith, thank you for your chart stat of the week. All right, man, that is going to do it for us at the Pop Shop Podcast this week. Tune in next week for more chart goodness. We'll be talking about Selena Gomez. We might have a very special guest next week. We shall see. Keith, do you have any parting words?
I do not.
All right, man, let's go out. It's Lady Gaga's week. It's her time to shine. Put your paws up. This is Born This Way. Thanks for listening, and take care.